This is a special episode of Washington Today during this week's Republican National Convention. This podcast is our post-convention coverage with analysis on the day's events.
Our campaign 2020 coverage continues. C-SPAN, your unfiltered view of politics.
On this third day of the Republican National Convention, it was an evening with some new faces, those Republican candidates for Congress, some familiar faces, including White House Counselor Kellyanne Conway, and of course, the formal acceptance by Vice President Mike Pence to serve another 4 years if reelected with President Trump. That event in Baltimore at Fort McHenry. We'll also hear in just a moment from two members of Congress, Republican Mike Kelly of Pennsylvania and Democrat Debbie Dingell of Michigan. But joining us from Chevy Chase, Maryland, is Jerry Seib. He is the executive editor for The Wall Street Journal, also the author of a brand new book titled We Should Have Seen It Coming, From Reagan to Trump, A Front Row Seat to a Political Revolution. And first, your top line thoughts of the speeches tonight, most notably that of the vice president.
Well, you know, I think the vice president gave a fairly conventional speech, a good one, but the kind you expect to hear. And there have been a lot of unconventional speeches at this convention, and I would say at the Democrats' convention last week as well. You know, he did what a vice president is supposed to do when he is renominated. You praise the boss, you go through the policy achievements, and then you attack the other guy. And that's pretty much what he did in turn in that speech. I think one of the most notable things was that what he had to say about Joe Biden, which sets the tone, I think, for the fall campaign. He said, you won't be safe in Joe Biden's America. That's the line. That's the law and order line, the starkest way you can present it. And he said that Joe Biden is the Trojan horse for the radical left. Again, that tells you what the attack lines are going to be on former Vice President Biden in the fall. And I think it was also notable that he sort of skirted by the coronavirus a little bit after having spent a lot of time on that problem throughout the course of the last 6 months, but he didn't ignore it entirely.
And of course, last week we heard from President Trump every single day of the Democratic Convention. We have not heard that much from the former Vice President Joe Biden. Does that surprise you?
You know, it does a little bit. And I was interesting that Mr. Biden popped up today with a video that his campaign put out that essentially talked about, the killing in Kenosha of another black man by police, but also talked about the violence in the streets and says that's not the answer. That needs to stop. I think that's a message that Democrats probably felt compelled to have Mr. Biden put out, because they started to be hammered over the Kenosha violence by Republicans and the law and order theme that it kind of draws to the surface for them. And they knew that was going to happen tonight. So we did hear from Joe Biden today, but I think he's probably going to have to get a little more assertive about putting himself out there. I know Kamala Harris is coming here to Washington tomorrow to respond to President Trump's speech. But, you know, I think the former vice president himself is probably going to feel the need to be a little more assertive and a little more visible.
And we'll have live coverage of Senator Kamala Harris's speech tomorrow. The moment in which Mike Pence made it official in Baltimore, here it is.
4 years ago, I answered the call to join this ticket because I knew that Donald Trump had the leadership and the vision to make America great again. And for the last 4 years, I've watched this president endure unrelenting attacks, but get up every day and fight to keep the promises that he made to the American people. So with gratitude for the confidence President Donald Trump has placed in me, the support of our Republican Party, and the grace of God, I humbly accept your nomination to run and serve as Vice President of the United States.
And Jerry Seib, the speech by the vice president, almost 37 minutes. The speech by Senator Kamala Harris, 18 and a half minutes. She did not have an audience. The vice president did. What about the optics tonight? How do you contrast the two?
Well, you know, look, I think it was a well-staged speech. The audience made it feel a little more like a conventional convention speech, if you will. There was some cheering. It wasn't the 15, 20,000 that you'd get in an arena, but there was some response to his applause lines. There was actually applause. And that sort of helps the optics, I think. On the other hand, it was striking that the guy who head of the coronavirus task force for the White House, Vice President Pence, was speaking to a group where there was neither social distancing nor any masks in sight. And so the optics of that were probably questionable to some. And so in that sense, this is not a normal time, and you can almost go too far in trying to make it feel like a normal event. And I think that was striking as well. I did think I was a little surprised at how long the speech was, but that's a kind of a normal length for a normal convention kind of speech from either the nominee or the vice presidential nominee. Again, you're not sure what's normal these days. But that, when I said at the outset, it felt like a conventional convention speech. That's what I had in mind.
And as you know, Democrats have been critical of the administration using the White House as a prop during this convention, including a ceremony that was woven into yesterday's events, the naturalization ceremony of those five new Americans. And a team of your reporters at The Wall Street Journal broke a story earlier tonight. Some of those individuals did not know they were going to be used in the convention. What can you tell us?
Well, we reached two of the five, and they told us they had no idea when they arrived, and they didn't arrive at the White House per se. They arrived at the old executive office building next door. They had no idea that they were going to be in a ceremony with the president, and that was going to be part of an event, essentially, at the Republican National Convention. So that's not what they expected. It's not what they were told. They didn't seem to object to it. But in terms of how odd that was as a convention activity, even more so by the fact that we discovered the people who were involved didn't know that that's what they were going to be used for, if that's the right term. And I think using a naturalization ceremony in a convention setting was going to be controversial. I think it's even more so to some extent if the people involved didn't really consent to do that, but kind of were taken by surprise.
What does the president need to do tomorrow evening? What are you expecting?
Well, Steve, I had a chance to talk to the president by phone a little bit over the weekend, and he told me that he wanted his speech to be very positive. I think he used that phrase three times in our conversation because I asked him, what do you want to get across? And he said, very positive, very positive. He thinks that's a contrast to the speech that former Vice President Biden gave last week where he talked about America being in a period of darkness, and obviously he thinks the source of that darkness is President Trump himself. The president said he wants to have a contrast, that he wants to offer a different kind of tone. Now, that's not necessarily what we think of as the tone we usually hear from Donald Trump. So it'll be interesting to see. He did say, I still will take some shots. So I think that's the tension within the president's speech. And what'll be most interesting to watch for is how much of it is positive, forward-looking promotion of the Trump agenda and how much of it is going on the attack. And, we all know he won in 2016 by being on the attack relentlessly, first against his primary opponents in the Republican primaries and then against Hillary Clinton in the general election. So you expect attacks from Donald Trump on the political campaign trail. We'll see how much he may idle that back a little bit tomorrow. But he emphasized positive when I talked with him.
How long did you talk with him and what else did he tell you?
Well, we talked for about 15 minutes. Some of the excerpts from my new book ran in the journal, and he called me to talk about those and to say that he liked them, which was nice. We talked about the convention. We talked about how he's going to run in the fall campaign. I think the other interesting thing that he said was, I asked him, I said, you still feel like you're running, you're campaigning as an anti-establishment outsider. And he said, yeah, I still feel like an outsider. I feel like an outsider in my own party sometimes. And that's the political persona of Donald Trump. He is not an inside player. He's not an establishment player. He's not a status quo guy. He's a disruptor. And to a large extent, that's kind of still how he conducts himself in his campaign. And it's what his supporters expect of him. They want him. And we've asked this question, Steve, in polls, Wall Street Journal, NBC News polls. And it's clear the people who support President Trump still want disruption. They still want the status quo attack. They don't think they've seen enough of that in the first 3.5 years. And that's what Donald Trump offers them. And they like that.
Which allows us to, again, promote your brand new book. The title, We Should Have Seen It Coming, From Reagan to Trump, A Front Row Seat to a Political Revolution. And we'll have much more on the book on C-SPAN 2's Book TV. But for tonight, Jerry Seib, joining us from Chevy Chase, Maryland, the executive editor of The Wall Street Journal. Thanks very much for your insights.
Steve, thanks for having me.
And by the way, tomorrow evening, our coverage will get underway at 8:30 Eastern Time with the live coverage of the president's acceptance speech. That's expected to happen around 10:30 with a crowd of an estimated 1,000 people on the South Lawn at the White House, followed by a fireworks display. Now we'll turn to two members of Congress, two veterans, Debbie Dingell, Democrat, joining us from her home in Michigan. But we want to begin with Congressman Mike Kelly, Republican from Butler, Pennsylvania. Your overall thought about the speech tonight by the vice president and the messages this week at your party's convention?
You know, I would just say that for most people that watched tonight and the response that I heard before coming on, it was very positive from the people that were calling in and talking to you, Steve. And I think Jerry was, as much as you can be in the position that he's in, was pretty much saying this was a very positive speech. I think that when you look at that combination of Donald Trump and then Mike Pence, you have a combination there that really comes together of opposites attracting. I think that the president's choice of Mike Pence as his running mate back in 16 was brilliant on his part, but he is a very successful businessman that knows how to build teams. I think the other side of this is, my goodness, there's so much good to talk about from the time this man came into office in 2017 until right now. And I think Vice President Pence covered it all very well tonight, everything from the economy to what we've done militarily to our position in the world to defeating ISIS and just on and on and on. And as much as some people don't like to hear the term about making America great again, listen, I understand. I've watched over the years as we continued, we, America, continued to cede market share to almost every other place in the world. And I thought this idea that we were trying to be more of a global entity than a strong, strong America really spoke loud to me. I'll tell the other thing that I really liked about this week, the message about pro-life. Pro-life, which I think is one of the most, if not the most important issue, it does come down to life and how you honor life. And that every single life matters, especially the unborn. And so I was really proud, and I've been on a lot of pieces of legislation. Chris Smith from New Jersey, as you know, has always been the strongest advocate for pro-life. I find it stunning that if you go across the aisle, you cannot find one pro-life member anymore that supports that position. So very pleased tonight, very pleased with the week. Now, Steve, listen, what a strong batting order. There wasn't one out in that lineup. And as every time I listened, you were either cheering or you were tearing. The combination of the greatness of what America is, and then the other stories about, if not for America, where would I be? Where would my family be? And it was just, to me, it just really showed the true fabric of what America is. And I just thought from a standpoint, and listen, you and I have known each other for a long time. I'm an Irish Catholic from Western Pennsylvania. I grew up in Pittsburgh. There was not one member of the Kelly family that would have identified themselves as a Republican. They identified themselves as hardworking, blue-collar people. And they thought their party was up about the working man. My dad was the first Kelly to ever wear a white shirt to work. My cousin Danny was the first Kelly to ever graduate from college. And so when I look at their journey of where they had to come from, whether it was the McTighs in Pittsburgh, whether it was the Simmelsberger up in Hastings, whether it was the Kellys in Pittsburgh, this combination. And I love to talk about Pittsburgh because that's the birthplace of steel, what we know it. And it's about putting all of these different elements together to produce a product that creates the most incredible product in the world that we have built things on forever and ever and ever. And it isn't that America. We are the great melting pot, and we have created a product that the rest of the world looks at, too many with envy, but a lot with just so in awe of who we are and what we've been able to accomplish. There will never, ever be another America. And to see where we are today and to see what's happening in our streets and to see how this has happened. And you know, the old story is, why do they continue to do it? People ask me, why do they do it? I said, because nobody's stopping them. Nobody's stopping them. When a mayor and a governor sit back and say they're just expressing themselves, vandals, anarchists, this is not expressing yourself. This is tearing apart the fabric of America. This isn't the fabric of America. This is everything that America isn't. And so I love this president. I love this administration. I would love to work with some of my colleagues on the other side, but it has been impossible for them to work with us. And I understand that. And this is not a political statement. You know, I'm so tired of political statements. I'm talking about really strong policy. Starting in 2017, we had wonderful policy working forward. I would have liked to have more help from the other side. Once the elections took place in 2018, it was just to stop all the progress right now, because we're more worried about November 3rd, 2020, than we are about America today and America tomorrow.
So, Congressman, let me bring in one of your colleagues, Debbie Dingell, Democrat from Dearborn, Michigan. And Representative Dingell, I want to bring one moment from earlier tonight the issue of pro-life, because I think that that was the message from Lou Holtz, the former Notre Dame coach. Here's what he said. I'll get your reaction after.
Because nobody has been a stronger advocate for the unborn than President Trump. The Biden-Harris ticket is the most radically pro-abortion campaign in history. They and other politicians are Catholics in name only and abandon innocent lives. President Trump protects those lives. I trust President Trump.
From the convention earlier tonight, Representative Debbie Dingell, your response, reaction.
Well, first of all, I want to say that I love Mike Kelly, and there are Republicans and Democrats that get along, and the fact of the matter is that we are Americans first. You know, it was, I have to give it to the Republicans that the convention this week has been very well organized and orchestrated. But what struck me about what's happening at the convention is what's not being talked about. First of all, I'm really worried about how this country is upside down. I'm worried about what COVID has done to all of us. And to even be at an event that people are not wearing masks, not keeping their physical distance, I just wish that the subject of masks had not become so political in this country, because if we just wore masks, we could be saving lives. If the president would just wear a mask and encourage other people to do, we would not have some of the issues that we are talking about. And I guess I agree with Mike. I mean, we both love cars. I'm a car girl. He's a car man. And we put the world on wheels. We want to keep that manufacturing in this country, and we need to work on that together. But I live in Mike comes from a steel town and a car. I've seen since in just the last year, there's a steel plant that is downriver that I have visited many times. We're actually tearing down one. But just a few months ago, they announced that they were going to be putting in a layoff, and we're learning that we're losing 1,600 more jobs there. A steel plant that's here in my hometown of Dearborn, AK Steel, several weeks ago shut down another line. Earlier, I was very upset. The president and I were in total agreement when General Motors announced that it was going to be shutting several plants. I want to work to keep those plants open. I want to work to bring that supply chain back. And by the way, NAFTA did need to be rewritten. And we worked with this White House to make it better. I was always someone that said that NAFTA had to be changed. But, you know, one of the things that I want to say respectfully to Mike and to people that are out there is that we are not for rioting and protests in the streets. What you didn't talk about, we have a problem in this country. And I have been very clear with Democrats, and I identified this as an issue several months ago, that people were going to try to use it as a wedge issue. They were going to try to divide us with fear and hatred. The fact of the matter is that if you are a young black man or a black man in this country, you are immediately looked at differently than if you are a white man. And that is a problem that we've got to address. But that doesn't mean that we don't support law enforcement. In my communities, the men and women, especially the towns, they're the glue. I lost a son of Dearborn. 4th of July, his parents still live here. 26 years old, 2 children, who was responding in Toledo. He was a policeman in Toledo, Michigan, to a call of an intoxicated man and was shot and killed. And during Ramadan this year, he wrote a letter to his family about why he was a policeman and that he loved his community and he wanted to protect them. So I go to every event there is. We're seeing lots of events supporting our law enforcement. I go to thank them. They've been there when during COVID, I've had lots of people threaten suicide, lots of people that I've needed wellness checks on. They're the ones to do it. We've seen an increase in domestic violence during COVID. I do a lot of work in that area. Law enforcement, those are the most volatile cases that they can respond to.
So, Congresswoman, to that point, let me jump in, because this is what the Vice President said on law enforcement. We'll get reaction from both of you in just a moment.
Last week, Joe Biden didn't say one word about the violence and chaos engulfing cities across this country. So let me be clear. The violence must stop, whether in Minneapolis, Portland, or Kenosha. Too many heroes have died defending our freedom to see Americans strike each other down. We will have law and order on the streets of this country for every American of every race and creed and color.
That from Baltimore earlier tonight. We'll go back to Congressman Mike Kelly, get your reaction, and then Representative Debbie Dingell.
Yeah, well, I think my reaction is probably what most people's reaction would be. There is always the opportunity for the mayors and the governors to pick up a phone if they don't have enough police force on the ground themselves to protect public and private property, to allow looters and anarchists and vandals to behave the way they are, destroying all kind of property, and sitting back and say, well, they're just expressing themselves. I think, listen, Deb and I get along very well. And she's part of the Fisher Body family, who used to be on the sill plate of every single General Motors car that was built. I know the name very well. I know what their heritage is. But I will say this. When push comes to shove, when you have to put it all on the line, when you have to show your true colors, it's not enough to say, this is what I would do if I could do it, as opposed to, I am violently opposed to what's taking place in our cities and some of our states today. I am fully behind our police. I don't think, you know, defunding the police force makes no sense to me. Giving the police force more funding is where I think it should go. And if you want, again, I'm going to talk about actions speaking louder than words. Senator Tim Scott had a wonderful piece of legislation in the Senate for police reform and was begging members of the Democrat side to come in. If you don't like what's here, please show us some amendments. Get involved with this. Let's fix this. Not one amendment came forward. And when you come to the House of Representatives, the silence is deafening when it comes to who is it that's standing up for law and order? Who is it that's protecting private and public property? Who is it that's looking at that Constitution for what it really means, the entirety of it? It's for peaceably to assemble. It's peaceably to assemble. It's not to tear down our cities. It's not to destroy private and public property. It's not to set police cars on fire. In Kenosha, they burned down two car dealerships. What does that have to do with anything that's going on socially in Kenosha? Nothing. And yet there were no arrests made. So I just say, look, we can sit and we can talk about this about, well, if I was able to do it, pro-life. You know, my personal opinion is, if it were up to me, well, you know what? That's why you get elected, and that's why you go to office, and that's when legislation comes up. If you really feel that way, then you get behind it. We can't find anybody to back any of our pro-life pieces. We can't find anybody on the other side of the aisle now speaking out. I mean, listen, Deb, I go to all these rallies, too, and I talk to our men and women in blue, and I talk to our brothers and sisters of other faiths and other ethnic sides. We can go and we can talk, but then we don't do anything. And I think what the people were looking for, and we heard it tonight, Steve, on some of the call-ins, I'm getting sick and tired of being sick and tired. Stop talking. Get off the pot and get something done. And we can do it. But damn it, it always comes down to something political and not good policy. That's where we're failing. And that's where we can work together, and we should be working together. And I will tell you right now, it's going to be darn hard for a person like Debbie Dingell to work with a guy like Mike Kelly until November the 4th.
Debbie Dingell, can you work with Mike Kelly?
Yes, I can work with Mike Kelly. And I will tell you, I work with Mike, and Mike's a good friend of him, my colleague Fred Upton. The fact of the matter is that one of the issues that we're playing, I don't want to say playing games, I'm trying to be civil here tonight, but Fred Upton and I sent a letter on the part of our delegation supporting our governor that why, when the states of Texas, Florida, California are getting 100% funding. We want 100% funding. We need the support of extending our National Guard here. Fred and I are working this week on a number of other issues related to the COVID crisis on plasma. I probably talk to Fred Upton every day, and Fred and I, because we're on the same committee, work to get things done. And I do think that we can't. Mike's right. I am not naive. It is going to be very political in Washington, D.C. But when you talk about, I am not going to sit here and say that we are, first of all, there are people in the streets on both sides causing problems. I have walked and gone to vigils, and I've had my police chief say, I don't want you here. There are people here that are bricks, and they are targeting you, and they're going to hurt you. And by the way, they knew exactly who they were, and they were not, that they were people that were trying to cause problems from a far right organization. When I supported our governor, because I didn't believe in the midst of COVID, when we had one of the highest numbers in the country, that people belonged on the steps of the Capitol with assault weapons, I got attacked for defending our governor, that people should be wearing masks. We shouldn't be handing children candy. An ambulance got blocked. I had people in front of my house with assault weapons. That's not right either. There are people on both sides that try to cause trouble. I do not want to see the destruction of any property, but I think leaders try to bring people together. They don't pour kerosene on that fire. And I think there are people in this administration that are trying to use this as a wedge issue. Let's have honest conversations. Leaders aren't afraid. I have police chiefs that are incredible. They are meeting and sitting down with Black Lives Matter. I just did it with a mayor, and we had had a situation in one of my towns. Somebody ran through, almost hit, destroyed a bike, hit some people participating in Black Lives Matter. We sat down. We're having the conversations. I'm not afraid to go in, have those conversations. We should not be destroying property, but we should also understand why a Black man in Kenosha, Wisconsin, was shot in the back with three children in the car, and we still have not been told what happened. In the city of Detroit, when there was a shooting, I'm not defending and getting into this in either way, but the chief at least immediately said, this is what happened, and released the videotapes. We should be having those body cameras. We need to be talking to communities. And when you talk about Joe Biden, Joe Biden's going to increase the money for law enforcement. He does not support defund the police. And it is this administration that decreased the amount of money that was being put into the COPS program. Joe Biden will fund it and will put money into law enforcement. And, you know, we can go back and forth at each other with statistics. That we need to stop worrying, as Mike Kelly says, and we need to start to solve problems. We need to stop pitting Americans against each other. And I'll tell you, one of the most fundamental, when you talk about the Constitution, one of the most fundamental pillars of our Constitution is freedom of speech. And I will not let anybody ever say that I and a whole lot of other Americans don't love that flag. And I love every single thing it stands for. And it also stands for freedom. And we do not live in Russia. We live in a country that people are entitled to free speech. And free speech means you can disagree with what they say, but they have the right to say it.
There was another moment in the speech in which the vice president went after Joe Biden's foreign policy history and also supporting what the president has done over the last 3.5 years. Let's watch that and get your reaction.
Joe Biden even opposed the operation that took down Osama bin Laden. It's no wonder that the Secretary of Defense under the Obama-Biden administration once said that Joe Biden has been, and I quote, wrong on nearly every major foreign policy and national security issue over the past 4 decades.
Congressman Mike Kelly, you understand politics. How big will foreign policy be in this election?
You know, I think foreign policy is always big, and I think in this situation, we have one candidate with almost a half a century of experience in Washington, and he was recognized as I think President Obama wanted him as his vice president because of his ability when it came to foreign policy. And yet, when you examine a half a century of being in Washington D.C., and then you sit back and you say, I understand that you were there for half a century. What I don't understand is why were your positions so flawed? I mean, what was it that you were looking at that the rest of the administration that you were serving on didn't see? And when Secretary Gates said that about Vice President Biden at that time, he wasn't tearing him down. I think he was just making a statement of fact. So there's a lot that goes into this stuff, Steve, and I know Debbie feels the same way. I just want to cover one thing, and I don't know how much time we have left. Steve, you talked about, when we talk about the pandemic and when we talk about COVID or the corona flu or the China flu, as you know, I had the China flu. I recovered from it. I'm into a program now. It's a plasma program. And the reason I want to bring it up for anybody that's viewing, if you have had the coronavirus and you are fully recovered, please go to the nearest doctors you can go to or blood banks that you can go to and let them know who you are. They will test you to find out if you have the antibodies in your blood that could be used to come up with a fix for this coronavirus. And so I'm just, while we were talking about foreign policy, I'm talking about right here at home. What could we do today for those that have had the coronavirus and recovered? Please go to your doctor and find out if you could be a possible donor of plasma. And I mean, wouldn't it be wonderful if somebody you never met and who never knew who you were actually benefited and their life was saved because of a donation of plasma that you were able to give? So on foreign policy, I would just think Mr. Biden's record speaks for itself. And the closer you look at his record, you understand why it's important for him probably. And this is going to sound mean and nasty, and I don't mean it this way, but it's better for him not to be in the mainstream and be at it where he has to answer really hard questions. I just know that when we look at where America is today, as compared to where America was pre the election of 2016, it's undeniable. We don't lead from behind anymore. The rest of the world looks to us and knows that they do have a friend and an ally that will defend them. It's 180 degrees different, the path that we're on. And I think that's what Secretary Gates was talking about when he talked about Vice President Biden when he was in the Obama administration, that he just thought he was wrong on almost everything that he was weighing in on. That's not something that anybody went to the secretary for to say, give me some bad information on Vice President Biden. I think this is just an honest assessment of what he felt the vice president's donations were or contributions were to the previous administration. That's what he was known for. And yet this is a man who was the Secretary of Defense for a couple of different presidents. And he was saying that he just seemed like he was wrong on almost everything. So I can't expand on that. I used to be on foreign affairs. I'm not now. I watch it very closely as Debbie does. I know we are so concerned about the safety and the health of our fellow Americans. But I think at some point, you got to look at it and say, well, okay, well, how do you fix this? I love what's happened in the last almost 4 years of where America was and where she is today. Across every spectrum, we are much stronger. We're much better off than we were previously.
We have about a minute left. Two quick follow-ups. First, Congressman Kelly, very quickly, how are you feeling tonight?
I feel really good. I do wish, I know we have this August recess, and I know Debbie feels the same way about this. I would rather be back in Washington, D.C., having the debates that we need to have, and we can do it. We can social distance. We've been done a very good job when it comes to doing our votes on the House floor. There's a lot of attention to safety there and making sure that that we're in a safe environment. But we need to be in Washington, D.C., sitting down across the table from each other, and actually being able to weigh in when we're talking about the next CARES package, when we're talking about packages that are out there that need to be tweaked. Look, we got $1.3 billion worth of state aid from the federal government came to Pennsylvania that's still sitting there and not being used. And so my question is, before we give you any more dollars from the federal funds, can you not tell us what you're going to do with the money we've already given you? And so we go back and forth on these things, but I think that any of us that have come from the private sector would understand that there is not an endless supply of money, and you only get to spend a dollar once. And for God's sake, when you're spending somebody else's dollar, and I'm talking about hardworking American taxpayers, be so much more careful than you would be with your own money in a case like that.
And of course, the House now scheduled to come back on September the 14th. Representative Debbie Dingell, after seeing three nights of this Republican convention, very quickly, do you sense that this race is going to tighten? Is it already tightening?
Well, now you're talking to Debbie Dingell, who's been saying, I don't believe a single poll. I was one of the very few people on the Republican or Democratic side that said that Donald Trump could win 4 years ago. I think this is going to be a competitive presidential race. I think it's going to be, honestly, the most important election of our lifetime. People need to engage. I am worried about the direction of the country. I do love Mike Kelly, but I'm also very worried about the fear and hatred that is dividing us as a country. I'm an American. I am not a Republican or Democrat first. And I think a leader needs to lead us. It needs to unite us. And I am very glad that Mike is doing okay. I was really scared when I heard that he was sick. But I also, as we're dealing with COVID, I wish he could get the president just to wear a mask, because do you know how many lives that would save? And I also want to see us get a vaccine. But I don't want us to be so quick that it's not safe, or that we're not trying to get something before the doctors think it's safe. And I can't not say something quickly on foreign policy. You know, Colin Powell has endorsed Joe Biden. I think the appearance of a sitting Secretary of State from a foreign country just crossed lines that we shouldn't have done. I think that we should be worried about what's happened with our membership in the World Health Organization or a number of other international organizations. I respect Mike, but I think there's another side that needs to be told on many of these things. And I know we're out of time, and I'm glad that Mike is healthy and I can celebrate his health tonight. And the one thing I do know is we both love this country and we're proud to be Americans.
And we'd love to have both of you back on again. Debbie Dingell, representative from Michigan, joining us from Dearborn, and Mike Kelly from Western Pennsylvania, Republican, joining us from his home in Butler, Pennsylvania, with the plates in the background. Where are you?
I'm in my dining room. That's why there's plates here, I guess. This is my wife has made a collection. These are all from different presidents' terms, and they're all behind me, I think, is President Lincoln's or Mrs. Lincoln's dinnerware. This is I don't want to push this too much, Steve, but it's hard for me, and I get along so well with Debbie. But since the president was elected, not from his inauguration, when people say, "Well, we just have to learn to get along together, we have to work together," my God, what night has this man had off? What day has he had off where he wasn't being attacked personally, the first lady, anybody in his family, or anybody he knew that may have been born in the same hospital on the same day that the president was? We've torn this president apart with an absolutely ridiculous impeachment proceedings, Russian collusion. It's just like one thing after another. And so it's hard for me. I can do almost anything. Deb and I can work on almost anything, but their leadership's not going to allow us to do that. I mean, you can't possibly look at what's happened in the United States and look what's happened on a duly elected president being attacked, not from the day he was inaugurated, but from the night he was elected. And it's never stopped. And in spite of all that, this country was on the most incredible trajectory until the China flu hit. And I think the saddest thing about that is, look what China has done to the world economy without firing a shot. They have destroyed the economy in so many different ways. It's going to take us a long time to recover. I can wear a mask, but more than anything else, we've got to get to work on these things, and we've got to get this economy up and running, because I do know this. The coal that fires that furnace comes out of a taxpayer's pocket. So if we want to have all these things, it's nice to have them, but you've got to have a dynamic and robust economy and people back to work and people who are excited about going back to work and going back to school. And I want to see the Fighting Irish play Michigan this year, but the Big Ten's going to not do it. Notre Dame went to the ACC. We're going to play a schedule. And I'll tell you what, there's nothing better for America than seeing strong competition on a level playing field with officiating that doesn't tilt it one way or the other. And so I just watched for almost 4 years now of a constant day to day, hour to hour, minute to minute, second by second, try to destroy a duly elected president of the United States and say, you know what, we just all need to get along. We need to get together, and he needs to stop spreading hate. Wow. Wow. Really?
From C-SPAN.
We're from Western Pennsylvania, and I got to tell you, you know what, if you work outside an open hearth, or if you're pounding spikes on the railway, so we're on the rails, we're in the mills, and we're in the mines, and I'll tell you what, we tell it like it is, and sometimes people don't like the way it's said, but they understand it. It's no pussyfooting around and making saying things that, well, this is what we'd like. When it comes to pro-life, I want every single child that's conceived to have a chance at life. That's what I want, and I think anybody who's a member of Congress that can't stand up and say, I want life for every single conception that takes place in this country, should never go back home and say, well, my personal preference would be something else. But in this case, I'm not allowed to vote pro-life. That is not who we are. We can talk about the Constitution. We can talk about all these different things that matter to us, really. The right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And the first item, life. Life.
Congressman Mike Kelly from Butler, Pennsylvania, thanks very much. And Representative Debbie Dingell, We'll have you back tomorrow evening. To both of you, thanks for being part of the conversation tonight after day three of this Republican convention.
Thanks, Steve. I'm going to be at the White House tomorrow night. I'm looking forward to it.
And a reminder, we'll be at the White House as well tomorrow evening for our live coverage of the day four of the convention. It gets underway at 8:30 p.m. Eastern Time. And, of course, all of our programming this week can be found on our website, cspan.org/RNC.